Welcome to the Inside the Rebels podcast. Coming off a 45-20 victory against Fresno State Saturday, we have found the cooler. Injuries aboard the team again. San Diego State up next. We'll get into that plus much more. I'm Joe Arrigo. Along with me, as always, Jonathan Von Tobel, JVT. JVT, buddy, let me start off. What did you think about the victory on Saturday, bro?
Obviously, I thought that it was exhilarating. Exhilarating is the right word, right? Because I thought they were going to lose the game. And I got in the morning breath. Anyway, so I picked Fresno State 31-28. Obviously, Dalton Snead, an awesome surprise because you had no idea. I didn't have any idea what we were going to get
Nobody
from quarterback
did.
Play. But a good win because it's a bad team that comes in and you beat the crap out of them. And that's what you want to see. If it's a bad team, like that's what was so surprising about the Idaho loss was it's a bad team. So you want to see them like they did. Not to the point of Jackson State, not to the level, but you want to see them handle a team that you know that they can beat, and they did that with Fresno State.
Yeah,
it was good to watch.
They have to throttle teams that they need to throttle, mm-hmm. and that's exactly what they did. I actually had UNLV winning, and the one thing I'm proud of—
Don't have to rub it in.
Well, no, I'm not. Exactly, right? Yeah. I'm going to. I'm going to throw some more salt to wound. I said that they're going to run for over 300 yards last week. I believe I said that, and I got that based off of last week's guest saying that Fresno State— is giving up on an average of 340-something yards on the ground per game. Cam Rowell from ESPN Fresno said that. When it comes to Dalton Snead, you know, I call him the cooler. Do you know what a cooler is?
In what sense? Like cooler that you fill your beer with?
No, okay. Not that type of cooler.
All right. No.
Okay, so I'm a preference. A cooler is basically a bouncer.
Okay.
And I don't want to call him the bouncer because, you know, he's not a big guy like that. He's probably about 5'10", 5'11", tops. After the game, I talked to him, and before we get to sound, I want to share the story. It was the coolest part about the whole game for me. After the game, I go down, like maybe with 3 minutes left, I go down to the field, and I'm kind of standing in the back end zone, and there's about 50 people after the game that's just waiting, and he comes off the field, and they just roar, and it's his family and friends, and it was the elation, the emotion that you've seen from them. Was phenomenal. So after the game, Dalton speaks to the parents and his dad. And at the end, it was real cool because his dad came up to him, the last person, and walked away from the family. And they shared a moment where they gave each other a hug and expressed how much they loved each other. And you could see the emotion in both of their eyes. And I pulled Dalton aside after and I said, you know, I'm going to call you the cooler. And he was like, the cooler? I said, I told him was a bouncer. And I said, you ever see the movie Roadhouse? And he goes, they named me after Patrick Swayze, Dalton from that movie. And I said, well, he's a cooler. That's what they call the guys that run, that control the bouncers. Yeah. So I called Dalton's new nickname for me is the cooler. And he played that way, actually. In fact, I talked to Dalton right after the game, and I asked him now how he felt about taking over for Johnny, you know, going into this week's game. This is what he said.
I mean, obviously, I was ecstatic. My emotions were through the air. But, you know, it was kind of a moment that I'd worked for my whole life. So when you get it, but that wasn't even close to where I wanted to be. That was just a step. So I got in the film room, studied, got with all my teammates. We practiced our butt off, and I mean, it showed out here tonight. The line blocked their ass off, and receivers were catching the ball. They were wide open. All I had to do was get them the ball and let them make plays.
You had a run that's probably going to be on the SportsCenter top 10. What, dude, it was a 90. It was the longest play in UNLV history. I don't know if you know that or not. And you have that record now. What went through your mind during that play?
Well, it was a designed pass play, and it just looked hairy. Didn't want to force it. We were backed up. So I just thought, okay, get out of here. And it almost went real bad real quick. I mean, I got back in the end zone, almost got safetied, but got a few blocks here and there and sprung me loose.
Okay, redshirt freshman coming in. They may have found the answer at quarterback with you the way you played tonight. You're probably going to make it tough for Coach Sanchez to make a decision in a few weeks if he has to make that decision. How comfortable are you to lead this team to another 4 wins to get to a bowl game?
I'm 100% comfortable with it. I mean, that's been my biggest dream. I've worked for it day in and day out. And if he wants to hand the reins over to me, then I'll take this team gladly. But that's his choice. So
Dalton Snead, 8-16, 129 yards, a touchdown, 15 carries, 147, one on the ground, and that was a hell of a run on the ground, 91 yards, longest play in UNLV history, run or pass. It made the SportsCenter top 10, mm-hmm. And I tell you what, JVT, talking to Dalton and really getting around, like being around him and talking to him a little bit and just being in his presence, you can see why people like him. He's got such an infectious attitude. He's a gritty player. Players respond to that, and I can't be happier for the kid.
Well, and you mentioned just the emotion that he had in his family. The first thing that went through my head when you're telling me that is the kid's journey up to this point. He's Hauk's only recruit, the only holdover from the Hauk regime when it comes to recruiting. You don't know how you fit in with a new coach and their system because obviously they didn't recruit you. Not that they didn't want you, but they don't know you. They didn't go out there, scout you, and want to bring you into the program. And then you see that they bring in another guy in Johnny Stanton, who is a very highly touted guy when he was coming out of high school. You think he's the savior. He doesn't play well. You come in your first game under the new regime, and you not light it up, but you take care of the ball, and you do what you need to do in order to win a football game, and you win in big fashion. I thought it wasn't – after you told me that, I feel that much better. I like the kid. I like what you saw from him. The quotes afterwards, when you mentioned the 91-yard touchdown run, how he was turned on the Jets when he got to about the 50, and then you could tell about the 20, he was slowing down and he couldn't do it. But, no, it was great to watch the kid because this is what you wanted out of your quarterback. Somebody to go out there. The numbers, same again, 8-16?
8-16, 129, and one touchdown through the air, 15 carries, 147 yards, and the one touchdown.
So obviously the running game, the running numbers stick out to you right there.
Absolutely.
But what sticks out to me, and I think what should stick out to a lot of people is, well, 8-16 for under 150 yards, I mean, that's not great. Well, that's what you wanted.
Well,
that's what you needed.
Exactly, and here's the thing. One thing I talked about with Tony was, you know, he said to me after the game, it was just a one-on-one conversation. I didn't record it because I was trying to get out of there. My nephew turned 21 that night, so I wanted to get to the family function.
And how did you get out of there? Like out of the Sam Boyd Stadium?
I got out of there. I got home at 12:45.
Man,
the game ended at almost midnight.
Yeah, I know. They got to kill the 7:30 kickoff.
The TV timeouts were, but the referee was great. I'll tell you about that later. But Tony said, you know, he goes, this is the first time all year, aside from Jackson State, that we didn't turn the ball over in the first half. And he goes, that was huge. And we eliminated all the dumb penalties, which is absolutely true. There wasn't a ton of penalties on UNLV in the first half. There was no turnovers in the first half. And what you've seen with Dalton, made some – he doesn't have that cannon arm that Johnny has, but he made some wow throws, been able to look off the safety. He did a lot of the little things in the pocket that you look for, and he actually gave his receivers a little more time to get open, and as well as when he got out to run, he didn't just get out the pocket, tuck the ball, and I'm out just running. He was actually looking to make plays downfield. Dalton, at the end of the day, Tony talked about game management, and I think that's what you alluded to. You know,
that's been the key term since the beginning of spring, is that we don't need anything. Look at the weapons that they had, at least in spring, and even now in the running game. You don't need anybody to go light it up through the air. Just take care of the football.
Well, this poses an interesting question. When Johnny comes back, and this is a very small sample size for Dalton, okay? When Stanton comes back, is it going to be Stanton's job, or will the cooler take over? If he has another game like he had... Let's say they go down to San Diego this week and he plays similar numbers. And let's say the game is a lot closer or if they win. Is it Dalton's job from that point forward?
I'll say this. You take away the 91-yard, the rushing stats, right? Because obviously that was a big run that's going to pad your running stats. But I'm looking at, and you mentioned it, turnovers. If we come back to Sam Boyd Stadium, right, after the Hawaii game, and that's 3 weeks, so maybe Johnny's back by then. If Dalton Snead has not committed a turnover and this offense is just humming along and maybe the defensive issues just pop back up, I would think it's Snead's job. Because, again, we don't need you to go out there and light the world on fire. Here's the keys. You don't even need to hit the gas. It's a Ferrari. All you got to do is let it idle. We'll go 25 miles an hour, and the rest will take care of itself. So I will say this right now, that if he goes these next two games, and let's limit it to maybe one turnover against San Diego State, and it's nothing terrible if it's trying to get out of the pocket and you get sacked from behind and you cop up the ball, nothing, just when you're looking at it like, Snead, what are you doing making that throw? If he could take care of the football, I don't see why it wouldn't be his job.
I think you have to ride the hot hand,
yeah.
Period. I mean, if Dalton's got the hot hand right now, and realistically, ESPN, I sent you a link yesterday, ESPN or his Bleacher Reporter, one of the other.
I think it was Bleacher Report, but yeah.
They did basically the rest of the season what they think is going to happen. They try to prognosticate it, and they said UNLV, the only two losses that they really see UNLV having is San Diego State and Boise State. That leaves them with 7 wins and a bowl. If Dalton can, and I asked Dalton, as you heard in the interview, you know, can you lead them to a bowl? Can you lead them to a bowl? And he said, absolutely. This kid is confident, and that makes the players around him confident. And in turn, when players play confident, they play at a different level. And look at this. I found this interesting. Now, the offensive line pulled out 364 yards on the ground. Second straight game, and that's a great stat from you. You gave me that stat. Did you know UNLV nationally is number 5 in the country in rushing yards? Mm-hmm. They're in the top 5 in the country.
Yep. It's fascinating. Well, look at the offensive line stats in general. I mean, also I think on there that I included, 2 sacks throughout 5 games for this offensive line. And now UNLV doesn't run the ball a lot, it doesn't pass the ball a lot, excuse me. But the fact that they haven't even given up that many, and I could even argue that one of those sacks, if I remember off the top of my head, was Johnny Stanton running into the rush and getting brought down. So this offensive line, and we talked about it before the season, it was going to be a big weapon coming in just with the added size and the added talent. It has been, everything is advertised. Because obviously, the numbers for an offensive lineman, for the big guys, you don't get a lot of glory. But when you look at the rushing game, and when you look at the fact that they don't give up a lot of quarterback pressures, this offensive line has been awesome.
Oh, they have. And actually, UNLV is tied for 2nd in the country with six sacks allowed and tied with 4 other schools.
Yep.
That is a hell of a job. And you got to give Barney Cotton, because, you know, he's in charge of the offensive line. You got to give Coach Sanchez.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to give those players and the people in charge of the weight program, you got to give them a bunch of credit, because at the end of the day, they added 20 and on an average of 20 pounds per player. Mm-hmm. They added the muscle. They're more physical. And we said going into it, I know you were at some of the spring games, the starting offensive line looks really good, and they have they're not as deep as most schools, but they have enough depth that if somebody goes down, someone can go in there and pick up the slack. So that's a good thing. And speaking of rushing, I mean, the offense, you put a paltry 6th in the nation.
Yeah, a paltry 6th.
With 1,365 yards.
I mean, growing up out here, too, I mean, that's something. Think about that. Like, if you're a UNLV football fan listening right now, think about that. Two key stats, at least when it comes to your offensive line, in terms of rushing and in pass protection, they're ranked in the top 10 in the nation. That's fascinating. That is something awesome to look at.
That's great.
Yes. But then we go back to, and I tie it back to the quarterback play, they're 2-3. So, again, if you get a guy like Dalton in there who can just take care of everything and doesn't need to do anything crazy, then this offense is going to be perfectly fine for the rest of the season.
It will be perfectly fine if they keep running the ball like that. And the quiet night goes to Lex Thomas. And it's funny, I talked to Lex right after the game, and he seen me. Mind you, Lex, me, and Jayon Miles were the 5-footers. Because we're all 5'5", really 5'5", and lower. Lex is listed at 5'7".
I think it's with those spikes on.
Exactly. Yeah. So I was talking to Lex, and I said, man, like, what happened? Is they just set you on? He goes, Joe, they keyed on me all game.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, so I knew I wasn't, you know, we knew pretty much early on that if I'm not able to break out, if I'm in, everything's going towards me. He's like, and there were some instances where, and I found it interesting, it was after Darren Woods went down. We'll get into Darren's injury in a little bit. The backfield at the same time, you have Dalton in the middle, Williams to his left, and Lex to his right. And who do you stop?
Exactly.
Because Chuck Williams, I text you in the middle of the game, Chuck is my new favorite player on UNLV.
I'll stick with Lexington Thomas. He's still my guy. If you're listening, Lex, which I doubt you are, you're still my guy.
No, you'd be surprised.
Oh, really?
You'd be surprised, yeah, because they're talking to me. But some of the players are talking to me about this after the game.
Okay.
But Chuck is had a hell of a game. 18 carries, 153 yards, a touchdown. With some of those, he had 2 runs of over 30 yards. Mm-hmm. One was like 39, another one was like 41. Where he broke out, one of them, he escaped. I mean, it was a lot like Dalton's run, where he went up the middle, and a guy kind of tried grabbing him by a shoulder pass, and he snuck out of it and bounced it out and took off. And I think he took it down inside the red zone. Mm-hmm. And I asked Chuck, because he's from Fresno, I said, you know, were you upset, or did you have a little chip on your shoulder going into this game because, you know, your hometown team snubbed you recruiting? This is what he said.
Yeah, a little bit, but it really didn't take over. I just wanted to get the win and help the team get the win, and I did whatever I could to get the win.
Now, that run you had in the fourth quarter that you kind of spun off a dude, you tried to yank your helmet off a little bit and you bounced out, that's something you just can't teach. What goes through your mind during that type of – when you in the mix like that?
Like Coach Sanchez says, fanatical effort. That's about it. fanatical effort. It was just an effort play. You can't teach effort. You got to give effort. You gotta, and sometimes the person that gives the most effort wins, and I gave the most.
Now, you're a true freshman out here playing with some big boys, and you're actually, you know, making a huge impact from the first game with Jackson State all the way to today. What's it like for you right now?
It's amazing. It feels like a dream every time I'm out there, but I realize I'm in reality, and I got to, you know, just be calm, focused, and do what I got to do.
Playing frenetically is what he said. Like playing just like basically balls out, balls to the wall, play at a frenetic pace. That's what Charles was talking about. You know, the refuse to lose mentality, and that's something that Tony told me after the game as well. This team is playing their guts out. And if you look at that formation we just talked about, the Williams on one side, Lex on the other, and even Williams lining up as a receiver at times. We talked about it during the clip that touchdown pass to Elijah Trost-Clair, it was out of that formation.
Yep.
And Lex came out, little swing pass.
Play action to Charles, play pump action. Fake to Lex.
Yeah, little pump. And actually, and I watched that play develop because where I was, it happened right in front of me in the press box. Not only was Trost-Clair open, he had a guy in the post wide open as well.
Mm.
82. I don't know. I'm don't know the number
at
right
now. At this point, yeah.
Yeah. 82, wide open in the post. I'm like, he's got his choice to throw to. And he put the ball on a dime to Trost-Clair, who caught it in stride, scored the touchdown, and that sideline went nuts. And I think it's all because you have two excellent offensive weapons on the field at the same time in the offense.
Well, and that's funny because going into this game, I kind of thought to myself, when are we going to see, even as I'm watching it, I'm like, how many times are we going to see when you actually put two or three even of these really talented backs in the backfield at once? Because like you said, that throws the defense for fits. I mean, who are we going to primarily cover on this play? Obviously, they keyed on Lex with the pump fake. Obviously, they keyed on the play action with Charles because you don't want either one of those guys to escape. And it leaves a guy like Trost-Clair wide open. And again, it's Dalton just staying within his head and being like, look, this is what the play is designed for, to fake one way. Maybe get him going the other way with Lex. You're going to have options downfield. And to drop it like that and just take care of the football, I mean, the weapons around him are there. You just need to stay within your lane. And it's awesome to see because, I mean, there was one point where they scored on three consecutive drives, touchdown, touchdown, touchdown right, for UNLV. I mean, that's what this offense can do. There's so much talent there, especially with the running game. And you saw it come to fruition because you take care of the football.
Well, here's an interesting note with Charles Williams, and I was told this by a Fresno person prior to the game. He said, you know, his high school coach called Fresno State and said, well, this is their area's 100-yard champ. This guy, he set the record for this area. Nobody's really recruiting him heavy. He'd be an excellent fan. What's his name? Okay, we'll take his name down. Never called. He was ignored by. Imagine.
Now I thought it was not ignored, but I thought that they wanted to make him into a wide receiver or something of that as well. If they had preliminary talks with him,
it was one conversation.
Moved the wide out.
No, okay, we're moving on. Yep. And that would be like if Tate Martell were interested in UNLV and Tony didn't know Tate and said, you know what, we'll go ahead and. He's like, oh, yeah, we know of him. Okay. We can move him to safety. No. And then he goes to, like, Reno or San Diego State and lights it up. Albeit Tate's going to Ohio State. But he goes and lights it up. You just don't do that. When you have – and that's what Tony talks about as far as keeping our Vegas talent home.
Yep.
He went into Fresno's backyard, and he did it with more than one player. He's Keys, the linebacker. That's a tight end from there as well. Williams, he goes into Fresno and steals their best players because Fresno doesn't do that. I give him credit, and Charles said he did play a little chip on his shoulder. But looking at the second quarter, was a big quarter. You had the big run, you had some things happen, but you had a negative thing happen as well. Midway through the second quarter on a little out route, Dalton hit Darren Woods Jr. And he caught the ball and tried to get upfield. And when he got upfield, the defensive player hit him in his left knee. It didn't look good. And I thought it was more when he landed because he did the splits when he landed.
Mm-hmm.
But upon watching the review upstairs, you could tell it was an ACL.
Yeah, the second, because I actually noticed the contact with the knee when I watched it up on the broadcast. Yeah, I was like, not again. You can't do this. It's like the position's cursed almost.
And he was coming into his own. Yep. Like the last 2 weeks, he's had big games. I mean, he had some really nice plays in this game.
Well, and
early
they started
on too.
Using him better, too, in the fact that the end arounds were working really well with him.
Yes.
I mean, he was running the ball extremely well out of those. And as you mentioned, just working on getting open more downfield. And just as a basic wide receiver, he was playing a lot better than he was the first two games. And to see him go down when you already don't have enough bodies as it is. I mean, 2 weeks ago, we're talking about moving Kirk Palahniuk to wide receiver. So you could fill those bodies.
You know what? That still may be an option.
Johnny comes back.
Let's just say hypothetically now, hypothetical situation. Dalton's in there next week, balling out, and he goes down with a major injury. Right? Let's say he hurts his knee, God forbid. Never wish that upon anybody. Would you go to Palahniuk, or at that point would you go to Rodgers?
I'm still in the mindset that I want to hold out on Armani, so I'm going Palahniuk.
Yeah, I wouldn't, because you know what you get with him. You get a guy that completed a pass no further than 3 yards against UCLA last year.
That's understandable, but I think they've shown that too. Armani, this is your development year. We don't want to burn your red shirt right now. If we would have, it would have been against Fresno State. Let's just status quo at the quarterback position until Johnny comes back. But obviously, that's all hypothetical.
That's why I prefaced it by saying if Dalton were to get hurt, if it's a major injury, short-term injury, let's say a couple plays, you put in. But let's say it is a knee or a broken bone in like an ankle or something. That's when I think you go. Because he took a lot of reps with the ones last week, ones and twos, more than what people have realized or knew. So that being said, Brandon Presley, Kendall Keys, Darren Woods.
Three scholarship guys.
Three of your top receivers that was a part of arguably the best group of receivers in the Mountain West Conference out for the year. Tross Clare stepped in. Tony mentioned putting a tight end in that spot for the time being. I know Holt, but he's day-to-day on with his own set of injuries.
Well, even with that, I found it interesting just because is Holt really a receiving weapon? He's got two catches for 17 yards up until this point. Now, obviously, that could be because they don't use tight ends as receiving threats as much in this offense, because we haven't really seen them a lot going out for passes, things of that nature. If they do, it's little simple out routes when they need a first down, like a third and three, something of that situation. I understand the physical nature of having a big-bodied tight end out there to play wide out, because it does give you mismatch on smaller DBs, but I don't see any of these tight ends as pure pass-catching threats.
I like Price. Okay. I think Price can be that guy. He's got great size, okay speed. Holt caught a lot of balls last year in junior college, and that's the thing. He was the junior college guy that he was a receiving tight end, and the other kid they brought in was more of the blocking tight end. So Holt can be that guy. This is where I would like to see you put Chuck Williams out there into the slot if you need to, if you want to do that. Let's get him in space. I would keep Lex in the backfield, because now you're moving that backer, or you're bringing that safety down for the most part to try to cover him. Now you have Lex going against 7 instead of 8 or 9 in the box. That matches up well for Lexington and for the offense. You could even flank Lex out if you want and put Charles back into the – put Chuck back in at the eye for him in the backfield and in the behind Snead or whomever. But I think it'd be – he has some options. Tony has some options, and they're going to get creative. We've seen some of the creativity this past week.
Well, one of the good things going for them, too, is we've mentioned it, is they're not really a vertical offense.
Yeah.
So it's not like you are – I mean, obviously, you're desperate for bodies at the position, but it's not a necessity when you can just run the ball as well as they do. And, I mean, it helps when you have a play-action attack that can get guys wide open.
Well, that, and then they're doubling up on Devontae Boyd.
Mm-hmm. Who's had a very quiet season since that first game.
Yeah, this week, he had two catches for 40-something yards. Mm-hmm. I mean, he had a 39-yard catch that I thought was his first. I mean, because I forgot about his catch in the second quarter. It was like a 5-yard, and I was like, okay. And then he caught this 39-yarder, and I tweeted out, oh, Devontae caught a 39-yard, Devontae gets in the books finally. And someone was like, oh, that's the second catch. And I went back and checked the stats, and I was like, oh, it was. They got to find a way to get Devontae going, and that may mean moving Devontae into the slot, moving him around on offense to try to put him in positions to be successful. That remains to be seen. But, you know, with Elijah Trostclair playing, he's a guy that he may be their fastest wide receiver. He's a guy that can get vertical. He may be a guy that, that takes over that role of blowing the top off, and then you have Devontae coming across the middle, working, you know, that, that some of the deep routes, a lot of the deep routes running that work in that middle of the field to pick up the big plays.
Yeah. I mean, again, when it comes to the wide receiver position, I want to see more work with the tight ends because it does give you that mismatch when you have smaller guys out there. But again, if you're running the ball for 365 yards a game, you don't really need it. And if your quarterback can get away with completing 50% of his passes, only 16 of them, by the way, attempted, I mean, this offense is going to go – the sky's the limit for him. That running game, obviously the backbone, it just really – it does. I mean, what was the quote for Tony? It was like a one-legged guy in an ass-kicking contest.
Exactly.
It just feels like, again, body after body after body. And even then, when you have Holt day-to-day – so even if they want to use him, we don't even know if we're going to get him full strength when it comes to San Diego State game.
Yeah, that's true. So looking back, there were two questions going into this game. Mm-hmm. The first one, obviously, was with Johnny out, the quarterback play. The second was the secondary. Mm-hmm. I can tell you this. After the game, I talked to Jayon Miles and Darius Mouton and their coach, J.D. Williams. J.D. was probably the most happiest coach on the team because he was – the Fresno State secondary coach in 2000 and 2001, Cam Rorell was actually one of his players. Mm-hmm. JD, the whole secondary knew that they're the ones under the gun, and Jayon and Darius were like, "Look, I said, hey, you know, you guys ball, you know, ball awareness sucks right now." And they're like, "Joe, we work on this every day at practice. Now we are very aware. We don't want to be the ones that lose games for us now." Tim Huff gave up quite a few. He didn't have a great game.
You're definitely, I think, seeing why Darius is the one that won out that battle in camp.
Yeah. But Torrey McTyre didn't play at all. Mm. That wasn't due to a suspension. That wasn't due to performance. What I've seen from the press box was he had, it looked like a thick brace on his left wrist. With a couple, like, or, and it looked like it was heavily taped. So I don't know what he did with his wrist. Mm-hmm. So that's why he didn't play. And he told the coaches he couldn't go. But I think if need be, he probably mm-hmm. could have if they went down or whatever. But Huff, he had the pass interference call that negated Mouton's interception. Mm-hmm. No, Key's interception. It was a ticky tack. Like, it wasn't anything egregious where he's grabbing the dude. I mean, it was...
Still got called for it, though. I mean, it adds to a giant, not a giant, but it adds to your portfolio of what you've done this season thus far. And I think, not that he's god-awful by any means, but I think you're just seeing signs of, one, why he got beat out in camp by Mouton.
Right.
And two, I mean, there were the questions, like you mentioned, the two questions. I think that question's still out there about the secondary because there
Absolutely.
Were a couple big completions that they were giving up. And, I mean, Fresno State got right back in the game. Because of, I think it was, what, a three-play drive? They went down the field, and I think two or three plays.
They had a one-play drive.
There we go.
Virgil to Peck for, like, 70-something. Yeah, Peck had 100.
Lit him up. Yep.
Yeah, 180, I think 185 yards.
Yep.
It was frustrating for me to watch that because I'm like, why? He's not that good. Mm-hmm. Like, you guys are comparable. But Mouton gave him a 58-yard completion as well. They know the deep ball is something. Until they stop it, they're going to get picked on. But you see a lot to their defense, though. I'm going to defend them real quick, and you can rip me for it all you want. I see that in the NFL now too. I'll use the Green Bay Packers as an example. Okay,
one of the worst secondaries to just watch.
Well, actually, they're one of the best young secondaries. But Darius Randle, their corner, is getting toasted on deep balls every single game. Hmm. I mean, it's ridiculous. I feel like I'm watching UNLV secondary. And this is a guy that was an all-rookie team member last year, got defensive rookie of the year votes last year. And it just comes down to his technique and what he is not doing. So you're seeing it more on every level, high school level, obviously the college and NFL levels. So this is something that unless you got locked down corners, I mean, Adoree Jackson got beat deep. You know, Biggie Marshall from USC. He gets beat deep repeatedly. So it's not just a UNLV problem.
No, of course not.
But these guys do know they have to step up. They've made that very clear that they're staying after practice working on it. Coach Williams, this was a big week for him. and he really, like, he was in their butts. And out of all the coaches, he's probably the most player-friendly coach on the staff. So the guy, his positional group really goes to bat for him.
Well, and I think what helped them a lot against Fresno State was the play of the front seven, I thought, for UNLV. I don't want to say it was night and day, but that definitely looked like a different team, at least up front with the down linemen and the linebackers. They looked physical. They were flying to the ball. I mean, it showed in the numbers against Fresno State on the ground, averaging 2 yards a carry. Yeah. McAleenan was in there a lot, getting his nose dirty. The four down linemen getting in on tackles, I thought, a lot throughout the night, and I thought that was good because it shows that you're getting penetration and you're getting to the ball carrier. The front seven definitely helped a lot when it came to Fresno State because a lot of the play action wasn't really setting up well because the front seven was snuffing everything out to begin with.
Right, and they hit Virgil quite a few times where he got happy feet.
Mm-hmm.
Like in the first quarter, they had a big hit on him on the first drive on like second down. Third down, they come in there, and he gets pressured, and it was a decent amount of pressure. He runs backwards, so to speak, and it was intentional ground. The ball didn't get past the line of scrimmage. He was still in the pot. Anyway, it was intentional ground. It was textbook intentional grounding. But that's what I've been talking about. I've been preaching it. You don't have to get sacks. If you're hitting the quarterback and you're getting to him, that's going to create just as much havoc because those are going to create the bad throws, those 50-50 balls that you got to come down and win.
Well, and that's what I've liked to see so far is because the first couple games, there wasn't even that pressure where guys were kind of having to roll out of the pocket or step backwards away from a rush or things of that nature. But then once you started getting a little more to like UCLA, when you saw Josh Rosen on his butt once or twice, when you saw Central Michigan, Cooper getting up off the ground five or six times, and then the next week against Idaho when you get three sacks. So that's why at the beginning of the season, my question was, okay, pass rush, what's going to be there? Now, obviously, it's clearly evolved to what we're going to get out of the secondary because the front seven, I think when you watch them on film, when you watch them on the field, they have improved from game one to game five.
Absolutely. And speaking of the front seven, they got a big test this week against San Diego State, who surprisingly lost to Southern Alabama, who beat Mississippi State earlier in the year. Mm-hmm. So it's not like Southern Alabama is a chump. But
It's surprising the amount of which they lost.
It was like
right?
47-20-something.
45-20-something around there.
Yeah. It wasn't the type of game I would expect from San Diego State. Now, San Diego State, we all know they have the best running back in the Mountain West Conference, a guy that will probably play on Sundays going forward. He's their all-time leading rusher and scorer already, and that's a school that includes Marshall Faulk as probably their best player in the history of the program. A local kid, I think he went to Rancho. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Don't believe it was Rancho, but it was
Donnell DP.
Pumphrey. Yeah, let me look this up right now.
He's a local guy that you can tell when Tony talks about keeping local guys home. This is one that kind of bites him in his ass and it burns his hide a little bit because he did go to San Diego State and didn't stay
Canyon
home.
Canyon Springs,
that's where it is. So Pumphrey's the man. But the way they played against the run, this front seven, they got a chance to, they're not going to stop him, but they got a chance to slow him down.
Well, I mean, possibly. There was one point in the South Alabama game where he had 7 carries for 9 yards. So there is a chance that they can muddle it up a little bit for him, right? That's the key, I think, the key term. Obviously, like you said, he's going to get his. He's a very, very talented back. And the offensive line for San Diego State, give them credit too. We talk about the offensive line for UNLV.
Yeah.
They're the one that opened the holes for him. I mean, some of the holes are gaping on some of those touchdown runs for him. But the thing is, you want to slow him down, and I think you want to hit him. You want to get him on the ground and make him feel it. You can't give him these wide-open runs and big gashing runs. Let him get 4 yards carry. That's fine. You can't let him get the home run hits because that's what he's so deadly at.
And that's one of the things that UNLV improved on this week, and we didn't talk about it and probably should have touched on it, and I want to touch on it right now. They're tackling. Mm-hmm. They did a really good job of wrapping guys up and finishing their tackles. They have to do that same thing this week. They don't have to play a perfect game like they would have against UCLA. Or like they had to against UCLA to win.
Yep.
But they have to play a game where it's very clean and they finish their tackles. Mm-hmm. Clean in a sense where no turnovers, very little penalties.
Those are the games you need against teams like this, obviously.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think they have a chance to slow him down and stay in this game because San Diego State's defense, I mean, Southern Alabama put 45 on them. You know, UNLV, I think this is the second game of the year that they got over 20. They scored over 20, or third game of the year, they scored over 21 points. But in those games, they're 2-1. So the key is to get above that 21 threshold. And get out there and finish what you start.
Well, and you talked about with UNLV, the quarterback play was a question. With San Diego State, they have the definition of a game manager because all they do is run the ball. So if you can get it to where they're not comfortable running it on like a third and five or something like that, where you put it in their quarterback's hands, that's where, again, the secondary will come into play is can you hold up against these wideouts? Because it is a somewhat limited passing attack for San Diego State.
Yeah, because they're in 12 personnel, and that's two tight ends, one running back, if you don't know. So I think a guy that's going to be critical this week is Leah, number 23. This is the type of game where this fits what he does best. I think you're going to see him have a pretty big game, and that's just – you know, not talking to anybody, just one-on-one, me looking at San Diego State. I watched, you know, we postponed the show for a day, and I watched film on him yesterday. This is the type of game where Matt Leah could really have a big-time game for UNLV.
Christian Chapman is the quarterback for San Diego State, by the way. On the season, 7 touchdowns to 2 picks, 697 yards. But so, again, not a world burner, and a lot of it's off play action. A lot of it is off of a successful running game. So, but I'm with you. I mean, because he was brought in, if I believe, to be a pass rush kind of guy to provide pressure. So, yeah. Leah, in that regard. So, definitely a big game for him, or just the linebackers in general, because in the run game, your linebackers got to get dirty. Your front seven or your front four, down linemen, eat up those blocks and try to get penetration. But if not, your linebackers there to clean it up, they're going to have a very, very long day just trying to corral Donnell Pumphrey all night long.
No doubt. Yeah. So who do you like in this game and why?
San Diego State, UNLV?
Yep.
I have to go with San Diego State. They're the better team. They're at home, but I think it's going to be a lot closer than these games have been in general. I think I was wrong last week, so I'm going to do it. I think UNLV stays at least within one score of this game. I think it's, let's go like a 24-21 win for the Aztecs.
Also, a 3-point. He's ain't three.
Look, because again, if the front seven for UNLV's defense, if they can play the way they did against Fresno State, physical linebackers cleaning up plays to where they don't get past 5 yards on the ground, things of that nature. I mean, they have a really good shot because San Diego State, as talented as they are offensively, they're a one-dimensional team when it comes to if they run the ball, run the ball, run the ball, run the ball. And if you can stop it, then you force them to do something they're not comfortable with, which is air it out. So if they can go out there and continue to play the way they have been, and Fresno State, like we mentioned, 2 yards a carry, if you can get to somewhere around there, it's going to be a successful night for you. And on top of that, UNLV's offense has shown, especially against Fresno State, that if you can have someone that takes care of the football, you have long drives, which eats up the clock, which means the opposing team's offense doesn't get to go out onto the field. And if you can cap those long drives with touchdowns, which they did against Fresno State, that leads to victory.
Well, I love the last part, because that's where I was going to go. The UNLV has to do a pretty good job of controlling the clock and making sure their defense gets plenty of rest, because the ground and pound will wear down a defense. And in a defense where they're not particularly deep, they need to keep their dudes on the field as often as possible. Mm-hmm. Keys comes home. Kenny Keys comes home to San Diego. I think he's going to have a little more. You know, he's already juiced up. He feels good. I think Kenny's going to, feel that same way going into it. I wish Kendall was with him. It's hard for me to pick against San Diego State, just because the talent level and where they were ranked versus, the body of work this year so far. I guess that's the best way to put it, their body of work. I don't think it's going to be a 24-21 game. I'm thinking like 37-34, 41-37, I think these guys are going, they're going to score on each other. Yep. Yeah, that's what you do in the Mountain West, you score. And I think that's where we're going.
So San Diego State still wins?
Yeah, I think so. I hope I'm wrong.
I mean, as do I.
I mean, I've only picked against UNLV one time this year, and I was against UCLA. And I was the one person in the room that said, it's going to be closer than what people think. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't surprise me if UNLV beat them, though. I'm telling you right now, I have
To be honest, in this conference, nothing would surprise you.
I just have a gut feel. My gut is telling me to pick UNLV, to be honest with you. Mm. But I'm trying to be
high off a good win.
Maybe I believe in what Tony sells, and this team is playing their guts out for him. This team is like seeing these guys and the way they are after the game, and the recruits that were there after the game. I mean, like, they had some major recruits that were there, and literally, like, these guys were juiced, like, they were just pumped. and they're, you know, talking to players. And Markel Grayson, for instance, got dumped, Gatorade dumped on him twice in the locker room.
Careful with that knee, all right?
Exactly, yeah. But, I mean, it was great. And he was amped up. He was like, yo, dude, like, do you see this? Like, we're on the come up. Like, this is going to happen. And everybody, like, seeing these guys and how they rally around each other and they rally around their coaching staff, I really want to pick UNLV to win this game. I'm going to be logical and not pick them, but it would not surprise me if they ended up, you know, shocking the people and beating you, San Diego State.
Something else I think you also have to take into account is this will be Dalton Snead's first road game. And it's a pretty – I mean, obviously, Qualcomm, they're not going to fill it up for San Diego State football. But it's a pretty big environment, you know, Qualcomm playing where they usually play on Sundays, Saturday night, you know. And your first start on the road, you're coming off of a huge – like you mentioned, I mean, hearing all that, you're coming off of a big emotional win when you've lost three in a row, you've looked really bad in the other ones, and you come out and you just blow your opponent out. So maybe is there room for a little bit of a letdown when you have to go back on the road? And this is their first of two road games, too.
Yeah.
I mean, you're on the road again for two consecutive weeks. Are you looking ahead to a very weak Hawaii team next week? Things of that nature. I mean, there's a lot to take into account, but I'm with you. I think the momentum is there for UNLV to go in and give San Diego State a really rough time, especially if they're coming off back off the road. They're coming back home after a butt whooping to some team that nobody's ever heard of. They obviously lost to them last year, but I think all the factors are there to sit here and say, I want to take UNLV, but like you said, the logical choice is the more talented San Diego State, who's been there and done that.
Yeah, I'm just not a believer in Rocky Long.
No?
I'm not. I've never been a fan of his. When he was at New Mexico or New Mexico State. And
yeah, then, I believe it was New Mexico.
Yeah, and then was down there. He took over for Hope. I'm not a fan of his at all. Not a believer in his. And, you know, Rebels, you know, Rebellion, don't hate me because I'm picking against you. Prove me wrong, because I would love to come back and eat crow next week. I really would. And
student section?
Oh yeah, I met with them. They're good dudes. They were turned up on Saturday. I was pretty happy for them. They were
their first year supporting UNLV football?
No, you know what? Mark and company.
I always throw shade at them. Sometimes.
I know. What is it? What's the deal with that, man?
To me, you want to know what it is, to be honest with you?
Yes.
It was at the beginning of the year. When you're going to go out there, you haven't been at Rebel football before. I think I mentioned this in our first podcast. Right. You haven't been at Rebel football before. Don't come out and ask for $10,000 so you guys can go drink and party in your first attempt at ever actually supporting the UNLV football program. You know, you got to show that you've been there before. I've been out there before. Before I got into media, I was one of the fans that went out there, bought tickets, and I think I mentioned this to you. One of my first dates with my girlfriend was at Sam Boyd Stadium. And why'd I go? Because I wanted to watch Kellen Moore set the record for wins for an FBS quarterback. You know? But
did she know that?
Yeah, she knew that. Oh, yeah, okay. She knew all about it. But long story short is, you know, I haven't seen you out there before. Coupled with the fact that during basketball season last year, maybe student support kind of waned off in the end.
Okay, I asked about that. Okay. And my guys over there told me that they had something planned for Zim. And during the production process, there was an accident, and it didn't happen. It was a prop, and it didn't happen.
No, I heard about that one. I remember they put up on Instagram, like, you know, we're bringing Kem Kong back 2.0, but in a different way. That's not my issue. My issue is when I'm sitting in the media section for UNLV basketball, and you look across at the student section, and there's maybe 15 people there, and then they get up and leave, and all of a sudden they move to my right of the media section because I don't know why. You know, that's your student section. You're supposed to be behind the basket. You're supposed to be showing support no matter what and no matter how bad your team is. And then, again, to couple with the fact that this is your first time showing up for UNLV football, I mean,
let me ask you a question.
You got to be there a little bit before. I'm like, all right, guys, I'm with you.
Okay, so let me ask you this.
I was getting drunk at tailgates way before him, Joe.
Hey, I'm going to say, okay, hold on. So since they made – so according – is this from what it sounds like to me? From over here, it sounds like you think they need some help with the turn-up. Why don't you show them?
I'm an impartial media member, man. I can't be doing that
anymore. We can go. We can go watch Menzies first
game.
I'll dress it whatever you want. We can go together. We'll sit in the
studio. I do UNLV post game too for basketball, so I can't be getting drunk.
You don't have to get drunk. Yeah. You don't have to get drunk to turn up.
I'll tell you one of my favorite, and this is because I grew up out here. So one of my favorite memories ever was my first year out of high school, right? And I spent some time in the dorms at UNLV. And we were playing, it was we back then, you know, back when I was a big old sportsman. But UNLV's UNLV is playing Hawaii. And we go out there, and, you know, being underage, we somehow get a handle of vodka, and we pour it into these, you know, the big red solo cups. But there was only a few of us, so, like, I'm talking, you know, the red solo cups.
Right.
It was to the brim of all vodka.
Nice.
And we're walking up, but there's security officers checking everything. So what do you have to do? You have to pound the vodka because you can't get rid of it. So I'm just plastered. It's one of my greatest, you know, we're pre-gaming in the tailgate, everything. It's just awesome. UNLV ends up winning on the final play. They end up winning 34-31. Student section is going nuts. We're literally connected to the Hawaii section. I'm sitting there just, you're F you, my, you know, crazy.
Right.
But my thing is, again, like, you know, that was it. That was my favorite memory. And since then, I've never seen the student section be the way it was that day. And maybe it was just because it was a nice memory for me and I was actually there. But I've been to games since, and I've been there as a media member. The support has never been there. And so to act like, okay, this is our season, we're here, we need help, you know, come out and support us. Like, no.
But you got to start somewhere, though.
Well, but that's my thing is, then start this year and don't act like, hey, look at us, we're coming out, we're supporting UNLV football now.
I can
show
this.
Us that you've been there, and then next season, come out and ask me, and maybe I'll throw you like 10, 20 bucks.
I didn't get that impression of them.
Okay.
I went to their area, which is by the nursery, I think sections 32 and 33. And I went down there, and they're having a ball. They're good people.
Oh, they're probably great people. Yeah, I don't think they're terrible souls
And they said, you know, this is something that for them, they're taking this very serious. They're like, we really want to turn the student section around. We really want to make this thing ours. We feel like this is the beginning of something special, not just, you know, with the team and with Coach Sanchez and with Coach Menzies and what he's doing. Because I think Menzies is going to do a phenomenal job. Mm-hmm. I'm 100% with you. He's building a program from scratch, and they couldn't have hired a better guy because, as a man, he's a great person. He's got a great staff, and I love what he's doing on the recruiting trail. So I think Menzies is the right hire.
I already got a four-star guy here.
Yeah, exactly. Awesome. Yep. And conversely, they're with the stadium potentially or most likely 95.9% going to happen. These kids are like, look, let's get out there and let's really put this together and start something special. It took the Duke crazies, it took them time. I forget Arizona State, it's like something 34 or something like that. Section 34, the 34 crew, those dudes are crazy. I think they're the best in all of college basketball. So why not throw your support behind the guys and just see what happens? And if it doesn't happen, you know what? No harm, no foul.
I agree with you, but you already said it is, you know, work your way up. Don't first season like, hey, we've decided to show up, come give us 10 grand.
The worst
someone
can say is no.
Huh?
The worst they can say is no.
But my thing is, don't ask for the money if you haven't been there. If you've been there for a year and you're like, hey, look, we were out here all year last year. We were here at the tailgate every single time. We were in the student section every single time. We have shown that through our first season, we are dedicated to building up the student section. Now, can we get some help? Because we have shown we've laid the groundwork. Don't automatically, and again, I go back to basketball season, especially after watching the student section, it's like just kind of diminish away to a very small section. You know, don't just show up and be like, hey, you know what? We've decided we're going to come out here this year, so why don't we get some money? No. Establish yourself first, show that you're going to be there consistently throughout the year, and then next season, okay, you know what? I'll throw my support behind you, but you have to show me that you're dedicated to it, not just show up and being like, hey, what's going on? It's like people who show up for bartered shows, and they're like, yeah, I'm a radio star. Well, no, you just got here.
No, you're paying for it.
Yeah, well, show me that you're dedicated to building your craft, and then I will put my own support behind you.
So you want show and proof?
Yeah.
See, me, I'm like, dude, you're in college. Go turn up and have fun and give the other team hell. Like, I'm all about that. Real quick, guys, they had some big-time recruits in attendance this past week. Jamal Neal, Farrell Hester, a commit, Markel Grayson, Potsi, I can't pronounce his name. P-O-U-T-A-S-I. His first and last name, same thing.
Really?
Yeah, crazy. Tony Fields, the second, Randall Grimes, Greg Francis, and Las Vegas High running back Elijah Hicks. He's a dude.
Cool.
Tony Fields is a dude. Big time dude.
I always use another running back.
Well, Tony Fields is an athlete.
Yeah.
He's an Arizona commit. He's a dude. When I don't say he's a dude often, this guy is a dude, and he's impressive off the field. The way he carries himself, big time guys are there. and they're excited about the program. I know Grayson was – I spent a lot of time with him after the game, and he was super, super
I've heard interviews up. With Grayson before, and he's been on Mitch and Pritch on ESPN 1100. I mean, the kid seems so stoked, not only to come and stay home and play for UNLV, but getting other kids here, because we've talked about it, is getting local guys to stay home. And Markel Grayson's one of those kids where you watch, when you listen to him talk, like with Mitch and Pritch, he seems set on getting guys, hey, let's stay home. Let's make Las Vegas like our town. We can build up UNLV. We can stay here and make it a better program. And he's one of those kids that has bought in hook, line, and sinker into Tony Sanchez's message, which is awesome because that's what you want to see.
Well, Randall Grimes is an SC commit, USC commit, and he was there, and he's Grayson's teammate at DP.
Yep. He's mentioned him before.
Along with Speedy Morris. He decommitted from UNLV, but Speedy's another guy. He's a dude. And Grimes, I mean, I think it's this. I know for sure this is the second time Grimes has been at UNLV on an unofficial. Mm. The first one was at Jackson State. I'm not sure if he was at the Idaho game, but seeing those guys there was huge. News came out in the RJ that
not surprising news, but yeah.
Yeah, Tina Kunsa Murphy looks like she's going to be out in spring. That's going to be here. She's going to move to a different role.
That's the one surprising thing is her contract's up in December, end of the calendar year, but they're keeping her on through the school year, which I thought that was the one kind of, that's interesting deal. But, I mean, I guess it's just to get your ducks all in a row, things of that nature.
Now, I have a list of people that I think, and this is not UNLV's list by any means, but guys that I feel would be qualified for everything that's happening here to take that next step. The top of the list is Tom Jurich from Louisville. He almost got the USC job. He declined at the last moment before it went to Lynn Swan. Chris Del Conte from TCU, another one. Jim Phillips from Northwestern. I think he'd be a very interesting person considering the medical center being built. John Curry from Kansas State. You're going to love this one. Kirby Hocut from Texas Tech.
Yeah,
Texas Tech. Maybe bring your boy Beard back.
Yeah, right?
Kevin White from Duke, which I think is a long shot because it's Duke, but you never know. And then last but not least, Chris Hill from Utah. All those guys have a couple things in common. One, Power 5 conferences.
Yep, which is what stuck out to me when you were naming them. But the thing is, not to jump or undercut your point, but UNLV's got to show that they got to pay. They want to be able to pay because Tina Kunzer Murphy, from what I understand, was in the bottom tier of athletic directors in the Mountain West. About $240,000 a year, something like that. Yeah, so you got to be able to, if you're UNLV, you want to show that you're going to pay somebody.
Well,
and it doesn't have to be in the millions, you know, because a lot of like Boise State, San Diego State, they're upwards of like $400,000 a year. So, but it's got to be around there.
But with the medical center being built, the Fertitta football complex,
definitely a more attractive job than it was,
right? And the stadium,
but plus Mendenhall Center, plus the new baseball facility.
Yes,
I mean it's all there.
It's and this market's about to explode. Mm-hmm. So, that being said, I've never met Tina, never had a conversation with her, but I wish her well. You know, I've seen her talking to in the press box to a couple people.
Questionable choices here in her time.
Yeah. I don't blame her for the basketball thing. I mean, it was FUBAR, no doubt about it, because it was public.
Well, the issue there was, and that's a big can of worms, but the issue there was if you were going to let the powers that be win out in the middle of the season, you should have fired them at the end of the year before. You shouldn't have fired him midseason, or you should have kept him on until the end of the year. One of the two, but you don't have this big question mark of whether Dave Rice is going to come back, and then he does come back, but then he ends up leaving three games into the conference schedule. You can't do that. It's either get rid of him before or get rid of him after.
I would agree with that, but...
And the fact that the coaching search was just a nightmare.
It was, and that's right after I got out here. Yep. And, you know, the whole thing with Cronin from Cincinnati was what it was. He wasn't going to leave there, but he damn near did. They thought they had an agreement with him. He left here saying that I'm going to be the head coach, and he went back there and totally reneged on it. Then he got Beard, who was the hot name, was one of the three or four hottest names, and then family circumstances, and I do air quotes when I say that, but we all know the story about him lying to and about whatever you said in the press conference.
The story with Tark that apparently drew some ire of some local media members and whatnot.
Yeah, whatever. Okay, we can move on from them. and then you bring in Marvin Menzies, who wanted the job. You know, he wants the job. He's where he wanted to be at. You know, they got the best guy at the end of the day. You know, and that's all that matters. Now, just because it was so public. I think that was the big thing.
Well, there was the Halleck extension too. Then because you mentioned you getting out here, I don't know if you heard the whole thing with Tim Chambers and the situation with the baseball coach, and you know, you give him an extension, and then all of a sudden, just mysteriously, he just goes off the rails. I mean, there was questionable extensions, things of that nature, declining attendance. I mean, you're going to go as an athletic director of all those things can happen to you in your tenure.
Absolutely, but I think maybe what she wanted was stability. Hmm. You know, showing that being a part of the program is stable. So, but we wish her the best, you know, at the end of the day.
No, I'm just wondering.
Tina,
yes.
Yes.
I never met you either. You don't even know who I am. You're never listening, but good luck. She's staying with the university, though. That's the weird thing. And
it's not weird. I think that she's been instrumental in a lot of things happening. I think she's played a nice role. I mean, look, give her credit for hiring Tony, and give her credit for hiring Menzies.
A lot of people say that it wasn't her choice.
I didn't know that. Well, she still got to get credit because she's an AD. Even though, like, Mike Garrett didn't really want to hire Pete Carroll, but he hired Pete Carroll, so he gets credit for it. There it is. Well, that's it for the fifth installment of Inside the Rebels.
Is it fifth? I lost count.
It's five.
Okay.
It's
when I was doing the rundown, I'm like, is it episode five? I'm like, I'm not going to throw it in there. I don't know.
It's just however many games that they played. That's true.
Is. Okay. Yeah.
You got to remember it that way.
Yep.
I'm Joe Arrigo. You can find me at Twitter at Joe Arrigo, A-R-R-I-G-O, or at Inside the Rebels. He is JVT. What's your Twitter handle?
At me, JVT.
And we didn't get to... We had emails. I forgot to tell you. We had emails from some listeners.
Oh, okay, cool.
So we'll get into that next week. Some of it is stadium stuff. There'll be more clarity at that time next week as well as more UNLV stuff. We want to thank you for listening. Check out everything at InsideTheRebels.com. You can hear the podcast there or on the LV Sports Network. Thanks to ESPN 1100, 100.9 ESPN Las Vegas for allowing me to jump in the studio and knock this out with JVT. And we'll talk to you next week after UNLV hopefully upsets San Diego State.